Hi, my name is Brian, and I'm powerless over alcohol.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Brian.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. I am an old man. I'm 64 years old. I came in here when many of you are my younger or older brother, sister. I have this stuff written out. First of all, I want to say thank you, and I pray to my Creator that what I may say may help somebody here. Thank you. I don't like that speaker. I mean that microphone. So just tone up. I was born to a whole family at one time on April the 9th, 1953. I was always looking for something. What's important on the day I was born? What happened? Well, one thing I did find was the Civil War ended on my birthday in 1864. William Shakespeare was also born. Some people say he wasn't on the same day, April 9th. So that's the two important things I get to live for. I had to write this out for notes anyway. I don't remember a whole lot before. I don't think I remember anything before four. But after four, I was told about all the things that had happened to me, such as when I was 2 years old, I got run over by a big water softener truck. And then after it ran out in the road and the lady across the street was washing her dishes and she ran outside to stop it, I was laying in the street and she said I tried to get up. Little grunt. What I was doing was playing with my two years older than my brother and his friend. And this water softener service person came in, backed his truck up in the driveway, and the yard was even with the sides of entry into the truck. And so we get a jump in the truck, and I guess he left it running because my brother and his friend were messing around with the gears, and I went into the back and they broke something and it started jerking and they jumped out the sides in the yard. I jumped out the back and fell into the tire and it rolled over me. And then the rest was history. I don't know what happened. I guess I broke everything in me. And one of the things that was scientifically, medically important about it was I was the second bladder sew-up job that had ever been successful in this country. Well, I thought that was neat. I do remember I was always getting into crap, and my brother, he was always instigating stuff, and I enjoyed that. And my brother and the kids were sticking their sticks in this bumblebee's nest underneath this porch in the neighbors. And I'm standing over there in the driveway and watching them, and all of a sudden, this queen bee comes out and smacks me right in the face. And I go in the house, and my mom's laying on the floor, and she's talking on the telephone, and she sees me, and she freaks. And so straight to the hospital. And they did what they could do, and then, I don't remember anymore. My brother and I were always causing trouble. We get in fights a lot. We were throwing plaster at each other one time. And he zipped a piece of plaster as I looked around the corner and went right by him, cut my eye open. Well, I mean, he didn't lay it open, but he cut it. And I got out of school early that day to go get it fixed, and the eye doctor said his machine could not even measure the little bit of strand that was still holding it together, but I kept a whole eye. And then I had a girlfriend when I was in third grade, and she was from Scotland, and I guess that's when I started stealing stuff, because I took my mom's wedding ring and didn't tell her about it, anyway, I gave it to my girlfriend, and she taught me how to French kiss. And we'd sit in her backyard after school. I'd walk her home from school in third grade, right? And we'd get in the bushes and we'd start kissing. And that was really neat. So I gave her my mom's wedding ring, and didn't tell my mom about it till like I was in my 20s. And she says, "Oh." I said, "Well," she said, "well, I collected insurance on it." Well, there you go. So I wasn't, it was a bad thing anyway. So my brother was a junior scientist. I always called him Dickie. And he would raise ant. He'd have all these ant farms in the basement. Then he'd get into raising earthworms, and then he'd get into raising salamanders, snakes, spiders, and it was kind of neat because he'd kill them, and then he'd put them in formaldehyde, and then he'd label them all, and he had all these jars labeled in the basement. That's when the kid, I guess he was about 8 years old. I was caught. Oh, I stole candy from the store, and I got caught down the corner, and I paid for that. It was hard to pay it back. 5 cents a week I get for my allowance. And I also was getting a cigarette butt out of the street one day, and my mom and her mom were sitting there in the window looking down at me. So I go in the house, and then they first give me a good whipping, and then they made me smoke a pack of cigarettes. And I was crying, screaming, all that crap, you know, a kid would do. But junior high, I got on a hockey team, Pee Wee's hockey team, and I was a center. And I was had it was great. I was doing really good, and then all of a sudden my knee went out. My left knee just went out, and I'm walking home from school, and it went out. I didn't know why. And I started crying, and so my mom takes me to the bone doctor uptown, whatever, and he X-rays it and says I've got osteochondritis descans, which is a piece of the knee, the kneecap just stops getting nourishment and it falls away from the knee, and so it gets stuck in there and you'll be going along. And it happened to him when he was skiing and it popped his kneecap off. The doctor, and he had the same operation in both of his knees. I didn't have to have an operation, but I was taken out of all sports, and when I was taken out of all sports, everybody, you know, and I didn't have a cast or anything, and I didn't have crutches, and everybody would give me crap, you know, and they'd want to pick fights with me and stuff, so I wasn't afraid. And the doctor says, "Well, your knees aren't getting any better after a couple of years," and so then he says, "Time to get on crutches." So I got put on crutches, and then I'm going to, you know, ninth grade, eighth grade. Let me see. I get put on crutches in the middle of the eighth grade. So and then, and for a year and a half, I was on crutches. And the teachers were talking crap about me with the kids, and it got pretty weird, you know. And so I had a lot of joy, I thought. And it's not that I was a puss. It was that I was just being the brunt. And so anyway, so in 10th grade, I was taking my leg healed, and I threw my crutches down enough times, fought enough people. I guess that's how it fixed it. So it was healed, and I was allowed to go back into track and wrestling, and that was it. Well, since then, anyway, that's in the past now. And my drug use started when I was 11 years old. I was in the Boy Scouts. I was in the Cub Scouts, and I got kicked out the night of my second class badge at an award ceremony because they complained that I was never there when it was time to do work, time to do jobs. And so so they kicked me out. And I became a member of this while I was in the YMCA, and I went to this co-rec. They had speakers, and this one speaker was the medical examiner for the city of Madison, Wisconsin. And he brought to this seminar, the speech that he gave, there's about four tables lined up, and they're just covered with drugs. And as I was going by, I knocked one off and went around with everybody a couple times, and then I picked it up. And this is not about drugs, it's about alcohol. But if it weren't for all the alcohol I drank, I probably couldn't have done all the drugs I did. And drugs are part of my story just because they were. And yet drinking was by far the most important thing I had to do. And I was always I've lived in a lot of places because I always carry, you know, everywhere I go, there I am, and take me with me. So I wasn't really interested in finding a cure for any addictions, marijuana, liquor. I had a wonderful time in Boston. I was only 14, and I had been going to a prep school in New York that I got a scholarship from, and I went there 1 year, and that was it. And after that 1 year, my brother was living in Boston, and he went to Europe for the summer and left me his apartment. And he had three other roommates. It was like a four-bedroom flat, and he had three other roommates, but nobody ever bothered me. And I worked at the Baskin Robbins as a soda jerk, and then I panhandled, and I made a lot of money panhandling on Harvard Square. And but I always drank. And when I went back to public school in Wisconsin, yeah. Does it bother everybody if I talk about drugs? Okay, thank you. When I was living in Boston, Cambridge, Harvard Square. I'd hang out there a lot, and then I'd be drinking all the time. And then I found this corner of a plastic bag, and it had white powder in it. And I knew this guy who was president of the local chapter for Hell's Angels, and I gave it to him. I said, "Here, I don't know what to do with this. You want it?" And he said, "Yeah." So he took it, and then in a couple of weeks, I saw him at the park, and he says, "I got something for you." And so he gives it to me, and it's like a little rock, white rock, and he says, "We fire him up." I said, "Well, I won't do that." I said, "I'll eat it." So I ate it, and I drank. I had these two girlfriends, and we had a gallon of Bally High, and we drank that whole gallon of Bally High on top of the heroin that I ate, and I had such a wonderful time. And we went to Boston Commons, and this is when Boston had clean water in the 60s. And we went to Boston Commons and stripped and got naked and went in the whatever you call it. It's like a river, and had a great time. But then when I got out, the president of Hell's Angels guy found me, and he says, "You're coming with me." And he takes me home with him for 3 days, and I have never been as sick as in ever with it. And well, that was, needless to say, it was the last time I did heroin. I'm not a glutton for punishment, not like that. I who had the dry heaves for 3 days. And then when I finally started waking up out of it, the morning of the third day, I just up and disappeared. Never seen him again in my life. Maybe that guy was sent from heaven. Okay, so then I go to public school in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm only, what am I now, 17, 16? A month later, I turned to Madison Public School, got suspended 5 times in my senior year. I wasn't allowed to graduate. I thumbed to California, got a ride with the roadies from who was that one? I met all these guys everywhere. These were the roadies for Jefferson Airplane, and then I lived with my uncle in Pacific Grove, and after the second day I got kicked out of his place because he saw me smoke a cigarette on the street a couple of doors down. He was driving by, you know, he was kind of whatever. And so I met people, and I always got along with people, and I met these people down the street, and these guys, young guys, and they rented this house, and they seemed to be okay, and they had girls coming in and out, running in and out, and I took up a job at Cannery Row in Monterey Bay, and I was a dishwasher, and boy, would I drink that Olympia beer every night on my way to work. And on my way back from work. And so that's also where I started getting into sangria. There's a place called Lum's, I think that's what it is, a big chain place in California. And and you go in there, you buy half a carafe and for a couple of bucks, drink it, go get some more or whatever. So I go back to Wisconsin after that summer, and I couldn't go to the UW, so I went to find out how to get into college. And they told me I had to have a GED first, or a high school diploma. So I took a GED, and because I did so well, I didn't have to take entrance exams, and they let me in. And then I met this girl who was a... I became her hostage. And she was 26 and I was 18. And she was a stewardess, for stewardess knows. This is dated. She was a flight attendant for some airlines back in those days. And then she took me to New York with her, and we stayed there for a while. Now, I don't remember what happened to her. I dropped out of college. I got in an automobile. This is my irresponsibility. You know, I was really irresponsible. So I had an automobile accident in the winter in a gas station. And the front end of my car hooked on the back of this guy's bumper. And nobody's around. And I go forward, and I go backwards, and I go forward, and I go backwards. And I'm smashing both of our cars up. And then the cops pull in, and I get a ticket. And he helps me get the car unhooked, and then I'm out of my way. But I didn't want to go to court, right? So I tell my friends, and about four of us decide we're going to make a caravan down to Daytona Beach in Florida, and from Wisconsin. And when we went down there that night, it was when we got to Daytona Beach, it was 28 degrees in Daytona Beach. It was cold. And we said, screw this. And so we said, let's go to the southernmost tip of Florida, and that was... before you get on the whatever those things are called, the Keys, before you get to the Keys. And it was 54 degrees, thank you. It was 54 degrees there, and that wasn't very nice either. So we started going up the West Coast, and we went to, we found this shanty town outside of Fort Myers, Florida, and the Gulf, and we called it Fort Misery, and Fort Misery was halfway between Sarasota and Nipples, and so the shanty town was officially named Harlem Heights, and we rented a house there. It was $5 a week, and there was no windows, and there was outhouses, and this shantytown was full of workers. I mean, a lot of Mexicans, a lot of whoever, a lot of workers. And so we lived there for a couple of months, and then I couldn't take it anymore. One of the guys, we moved in a drunken state. We were all drunk, and it was time, oh, we got to move that damn outhouse. It's getting full. So we dig another hole next to it, and we go to move it, and one of the guys falls in the old hole, and we all laugh, and it was fun. And then, I'm thinking, well, we got to take care of the animals, and I find an armadillo that's been hit by a car or something, and I bring him home, and I just feed him vegetables and stuff, and keep him alive for a couple of weeks, and I don't remember what happened. I think he died. I took a job in town, in Fort Myers, and I started working for a roofing company, and I was a helper. And with this first company, within a couple of weeks, I was the foreman's right hand man. And then, and I'd never done roofing before, and then in a month I was working with one man who I thought he was old as shit, and he was 54, and I was, how old was I, 19? Yeah, everything I know I learned from him. And I have my own roofing business, and I've operated it for several years. And It's like I'm destined to be to roof your house. You know, and it takes too much work. So, anyway, where was I? That's So then I go to Atlanta. I met my first wife at Alex Cooley's Electric Ballroom. You remember that place? And we were married for 7 years. The latter of which I drank successfully, and but the thing is, until another woman was to have my child, then we became not friends anymore. And but we moved. We wanted to stay together, so we moved to Denver, Colorado, and we fell apart in Denver. And then I didn't know what to do, so I took my El Camino and drove to Los Angeles and sold it at a gas station for about double what I paid for it. And then I lived in Los Angeles for a while, and I moved in with who used to be a high school sweetheart from Wisconsin. And then now I had taken her hostage, and then I went back to Atlanta and got my Austin Healey. Not Atlanta, went back to Denver, got my Austin Healey, and decided, where can I go? Where can I go? Austin, Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And so I go to Austin, Texas, and there I lost my Austin Healey because I was in a wreck with it. Was I in a wreck with it? No, I was in a wreck with my Jeep. But I had the Austin Healey, and somebody else got it. After my coma, I mean, I was in an accident that put me in a coma for 2 months. I took another. So the hostage I had, Kathy, who I had lived with in Los Angeles, Susie, I left in Denver. Kathy, I moved in with in Los Angeles. Then I took her to Austin, Texas, and we were there. And then I found this other girl, and her name was Maureen. And I was 26, a ripe old man, 26. She was 17. And she wanted to be with me. So we took a trip down to Galveston, and we came back. I moved her in, and she became my hostage for a while. And we were in the accident. That's another whole story. So we got in this accident, and it was on the night of her birthday, her 18th birthday. And I was I was still behind the wheel. The Jeep, the top was ripped off. It hit a telephone pole and tore the top of the Jeep off, and then started flipping the Jeep over about, they said 5 times, and I was still behind the wheel, and I didn't even have a seatbelt on. And my passenger was thrown. She was on crutches for a couple of weeks, gash in her leg, and then I went into a coma. And have I learned any responsibility by then? No. No, I went into a nursing home. The hospital kept me for 2 months, kept me, and I stayed alive. They couldn't kill me. And then after 2 months, they said, we've got to do something with him. So they put me in a nursing home, and I became ward of the state of Texas. And my roommate was 57 years old, and I was 26. And he was in there at 57 because he had suffered his third stroke. And I didn't know anything at all. There was a poster board of my pictures on the wall next to me, next to my bed. And my bed was a gigantic baby bed with sides, and there were straps. I was strapped, nylon strap here, and over my thighs all the time. And that's where I woke up. And they do that because of comatose victims will hurt themselves when they wake up. Well, I managed to get out of it, and I managed to jump over the rail, like I'm going to just jump over and land on my feet and run away. And it didn't work that way. I jumped over the rail and it hit me in the head, and I land on my head, and blood is everywhere, and I'm really pissed off, right? And so I pull myself into the bathroom, and I pull up on the sink, and I rub the blood all over the mirrors, all over the walls, everything I could. And I also tried to leave the hospital, and this is another time, the nursing home, I got in a wheelchair, and I go down the hallway, and I kick the door open, and I go down the escape, and I'm getting down the driveway, and I'm going down to the street, and all of a sudden there's all these nurses running behind me. And so I go down the sidewalk, about 40, 50 yards down the sidewalk, and all of a sudden there they are. They grab me, and I stop. I just quit. I cease fighting them. I don't know. Something came over me. I don't know what it was, and I just stopped, and I became very friendly. And they were looking at me because they couldn't understand, because I was such a mean person before that. I remember waking up from the coma, and when the nurses came over my bed and looked at me, I grabbed their tits and I twisted them, and I said, "Oh, titty twister!" this is a grown man, 26. Well, but he wasn't all there. So, even though there I was. So, okay, that was my life of recovering just from life, from near death. But then I got kicked out. I went to the rehab hospital in Wisconsin, and I was kicked out of there. Well, I wasn't kicked out of there. I got caught. I didn't get caught until I got back in the hospital, and I was drunk, and I was on medication as well, and they stayed up with me and thought I was going to die. And then, so they didn't let me out anymore. So I found alcohol in the hospital. This guy down the hall, his dad was a syndicate owner, and he owned all these big earth moving machines out in the west in Montana and stuff. And they rolled over this kid with one of those humongous trucks that are big around as, I mean, the tires. Have you ever seen those tires that are like 30 feet tall? And they rolled over his Cadillac convertible with him in it. And so he's paralyzed from the neck down. He was down the hall from me. And he had a party, and all these guys running around in suits and carrying bottles and Jack Daniels and stuff, and, you know, covered up, of course, but they gave me a bottle, and I went to drinking it, and then I got more crap. Of course, I had to get caught doing everything I did. Why? Because I'm a drunk. Okay. And then I mean, my life has been an adventure, but you know, it's the life of Brian. Yeah, right. Then I get to I come back to Georgia again, and I rent a house up in Norcross. And I rent out the rooms, and the rooms I rent out, they're all drug dealers. And I'm going, well, I don't know, just be careful. And these guys were counting like $80,000 cash on my kitchen table one night. And I'm going, oh, that's neat. And so they started giving me these drugs, and I was going out and selling them at the bars on Peachtree Industrial. Well, of course, I got caught. I was drunk. I'd driven a truck down to Florida, dropped it off, and came back and never even slept. And then I'm going to drive out to this bar, and when I go by a GM plant on the access road there, I did something, and the cop, this blue light behind me, or then it was red lights behind me, and he tries to get me to pull over. I wouldn't pull over, and then they start coming down the other way, two of them, And so they're going to sandwich me, and I pull over. And when I pull over, the cop says, "Get out of the car," and get out of the car. And he swings at me like that, and I was wearing this baseball cap. I mean, not a baseball cap. It was a Texas cowboy hat, buddy. And when I ducked, he hit the hat and went out on the road. And right then, the other two cops pulled up in these separate cars. They jumped out of their car, and they ran up there, and they got him, and he told them not to mess with me. Well, I promptly went to jail, and I had drugs. I had pot, a quarter pound of pot in dime bags, and I had some stuff that they thought was cocaine, but it wasn't. And so there I was, in trouble again. And why? Because I can't keep from drinking. And so I jumped bail. A friend of mine puts his business up as to let me out of jail. And then I split the state. I go up to Minnesota, and there was some other friends that I met here in Atlanta, and from previous years when I was married. And then I'm going to go to AA, right? And I just didn't drink. I'd gone to Biscayne here for about a month, 2 months. And then I went up there, and I lasted 3 days, and I had to join my friends in their softball teams because they drink a barrel of beer every time they had a game, a practice. And so I was there, and then I take a job at McDonald's, and my first paycheck, I think, was $18, and that was for a week and a half of work, because they only let you work a couple hours here and a couple hours there, and then they take taxes. And so with that $18, I go buy me a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I drink half of it on the way home. And I had my friend's 15 speed bicycle, and I crashed it up and bent the wheel and everything. And when I got home, he said, "You got to stop drinking. You're gonna have to get out of here." And so I did. I go to this group called Friday Friends, and they meet Fridays only. And everybody's telling me, "You gotta go to meetings more than us once a week." Yeah, right. And so a little did I know what I know today. And so then I get wind. I talked to my grandmother, of all people, she was still alive, and she said that the law was looking for me. She said, "Your mother said the law's looking for her. Where are you?" And I said, "I'm here in Atlanta." She says, "Well, the law called your mother and said you were not to be found." And so I said, "Really?" And she says, "Yeah." And I go, "They better look again." And so I go, "Oh shit." And we hang up, and I'd already done the damage to my friend's bicycle, and drank all that liquor myself, and I swore off the rest, and I didn't drink the other half. And the very next day, I bought I was afraid to get on a plane because they're going to want me, they're going to be waiting at the neighbor at the airport. It's bullshit. And so I got a bus ticket and rode a bus back to Atlanta. And went right straight to my friend's house, who had put the money up for me, or his business up for me, to go to court on that previous drug charge from drunken drug or whatever, in front of GM. And we went out to dinner. There's a place on a chicken place in Buford Highway, anyway. And we went to dinner, and while we were at dinner, I said, "Max," he says, "do me a favor." And his wife is there, and he says, "Well, I don't know." And I said, "Take me let's go back to your house and let me get my bag of toiletries and shit and then carry me up to Shamley jail, will you?
What?
I said, yeah, please. And so he does. He takes me up to Shamley jail, and I go into jail, and I'm there at the window, and I put my bag on the window, and I said, I'm here, and I'm here to move in. And what do you mean move in? And I said, you have a warrant for me. The guy looks at me. He says, what's your name? So he goes back and he looks for it. Can't find it. We don't got no. And he looks and I look around some more, and he couldn't find it. And I said, I swear you got one in there. And so he looks again, and then two guys are looking, and we do have something here. And so they had a warrant from before for a DUI that I never went in on when I was going up Buford Highway, and I ran a red light and I was drunk, and I just didn't show up for that from the previous year. And and I knew once they got me, I'd get that out of the way, and then they would send me to DeKalb County, where I sat for two more months in DeKalb County, and for the drug charge from the GM plant or the alcohol drugs. And so there I am, and I turned myself in and got put in three different cells because I kept getting in fights. I don't know what they want to fight about. and the funny thing is, I was not the cause. It was always those guys, and it's just fortunate. DeKalb County is funny. They have cells. The smallest cell is like 28 people, and 28 bunks. They put in 35, 36 people on 28 bunks because then put you underneath the bunk, and that's where I stayed for 2 months. No, for a month, until it moved up enough where the people, as they got out, then I finally got me a bunk. But I got in a few fights in there, and the last cell I was in, the guys were just normal. They didn't care about nothing. They were normal people. They were lifers, is what they were. They just hadn't gone to Jackson yet. And so I finally get a court date, and I go before the judge and public defender and the prosecuting attorney, and they say you get out on the First Offenders Act, First Time I Got Caught Act, but you get 10 years reporting weekly probation. And I did shit, man. So, but I was better than the cells on the outside. I get to go home, and I did that for about 3 months. And my probation officer was head of the probation department. King was his name. And I come in that one time after about 3 months, and I'm there every week. And he says, I'm going to sign your papers. You just don't go out of state. You don't have to come back. In 10 years, come back to my office, and I'll sign you off, and you'll be free to go. But you're free for now, he said. But just don't leave the state. And then I came into AA, so I couldn't leave the state. Well, is that it? Yeah. Something like that. And so I drank the water. I guess I better tell you. That was in 1980. I came in here in 1982. I stayed in here. I haven't had a drink since January 8th, 1983. But I didn't quit smoking pot for two more years. So my clean day is 1985, and this year I celebrated 32 clean years. And I also turned, on my real birthday, and I also turned 64. On the same day. So half my life has been clean and sober. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of everything ain't enough for nothing to me. I got a nudge from the judge, thought it put me in recovery. Put the plug in the jug. Man, I feel like I've been set free. For too much of everything, ain't enough for nothing to me. Thank you.